You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Sam, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell the listeners what we might be talking about today.
My name is Sam Andreg. I'm a pharmacist. I grew up in the Midwest, small town Iowa. And I think what would be interesting to talk about is my transition away from practice completely and into technology, where I am today. I run a company called DocStation.
As I started looking at DocStation right before we were talking here, I'm thinking, now, wait a minute. There's a few docs involved here. There's the doctor and there's the documents. And I thought both of those kind of work. So fill us in. What is DocStation?
Yeah, so it's a clinical platform that pharmacists use to take care of patients and get paid to do that. And so you pointed out something interesting that, you know, I considered when choosing the name for the company, which was doc, I think originally came from that document. We need a clinical platform to document that the care that we're providing and be able to get reimbursed for it. But what we're really trying to do is inspire a mindset for pharmacists out there to really believe that that D behind their name stands for doctor. And we're trying to transition into more of a role in primary care. And so it's meant to be uplifting and inspiring. And it was for me, and it still is. And it's part of the mission of the company.
Years ago, somebody said that pharmacists do a terrible job of documenting. And the story that I was told, someone compared it to, like, if you go to a lube and oil shop, you know, those guys get their clipboard out, you know, and they show you the 50 things they did, you know, and pharmacists, they do a lot, but they just suck at recording it. That's a big part of it, right?
I think it's an interesting predicament we found ourselves in, because you know, the pharmacy business model has evolved over time, and because it's been so centered around dispensing prescriptions, a lot of the operations in community and retail pharmacies have just been about how to optimize volume, how to dispense as many prescriptions as possible at the lowest possible cost. And because of that, any you know, amount of time or extra time that we would have to spend with patients, let alone document our interactions with them, is basically doesn't exist, right? And so we're so busy filling these prescriptions. Now,
it was actually cost prohibitive to do that. I mean, every time you did that, you were falling behind on something else. It's not just that maybe you didn't want to do it or didn't have the skills or something. It was actually a negative issue. I mean, you were losing money doing it.
Right, exactly right. And now we're in the situation where, you know, we can evolve our business model. The opportunity's there, but we're stuck in this chicken or egg situation, right? So if we want to get paid, we have to document.
Yeah.
And we have a hard time creating that time in order to do it. So it's a barrier to entry to get there. And those are some of the things that we're trying to solve with technology and with software.
You're right about the chicken and the egg, because I remember probably 15 years ago, I was sick of the reimbursement coming through. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time, like the, I don't know, NCPA or something like that, it had this like pretty fancy looking 3-part form, you know, it was high tech carbon copies, you know, and stuff back then. And I thought, Right. Damn it, I'm going to document. And I probably got back from one of the weekend, not retreat, what do you call them? You know, what do you call the expo? What would you call it?
Yeah, NCPA. Conference. Whatever it
is. I probably got back from one of the weekend conferences and like, I'm going to do everything. And that probably lasted about 15 minutes, you know, until I got hungry for lunch or something, you know,
well, exactly,
because it just took too long. You didn't. And it was a chicken and the egg. You didn't know what you were going to do with the damn thing once you got it done.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different parts of the process to actually, you know, document it and then get paid. I mean, like there's a whole ton of things that need to happen in between, and a form's great, right? That's the starting point. Those are the building blocks. But how do we turn that into actual revenue and revenue that we can grow and build a sustainable business on? So those are the intricacies, like the burden essentially that I've taken on, that we've taken on as a company, to just, you know, bear that burden for pharmacists and just make it easy to take care of patients, document quickly, and get paid.
So The second end of the document, which never came to fruition for me, as these things just rotted in a drawer, I probably bought 500 of them, and I probably went through about three of them. So the second end of the documentation, what is that? You have a fancier way to get this in, but where does that go then?
It depends, is the interesting question. So let's compare it to, you know, physicians or nurse practitioner or a PA or a chiropractor or really any provider listed in the Social Security Act as, you know, a provider.
Which is from 1970, right? And we're not part of it?
No, exactly. I think it was even before that.
Way back, like 50 some years ago, we're not part of it and never have been.
Never have been. And there's a whole bunch of issues and barriers around why that is. They just reintroduced the legislation in the House and in the Senate, which is exciting, but
yeah,
the same barriers remain. But let's take that process. We wanted to be a physician extender or a mid-level provider. We document that care. A lot of times in, you know, physician land or nurse practitioner land, it's free, still free text notes, right? I'm writing a SOAP note. That's how I was trained. And, you know, it's like having a Word document open, and I track the conversation, and add some labs and vital information in there, my assessment and my plan. And on the back end, the way it still happens a lot of it today is you've got a medical coder or someone reading through that note, looking at the documentation.
That was put in by one of these other professions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just a side effect of where the technology was at the time when we shifted to, you know, electronic records. So you've got an entire army or department of medical coders who read through those free text notes that were captured either during or after the visit and turn it into discrete data or billing codes, for example, and lots of different other types of codes, but essentially in a format that can be sent to a health insurance company or a payer.
The physician, PA, nurse practitioner, they're not necessarily finding the codes then. They're kind of writing out what happened. And then the billing company, which are the billers, the coders, who mm-hmm. are either working for the office or probably hired out, they're taking these notes and putting them into coded information.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny. You tripped up right there. You said billers, and then you walked it back and said coders. Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the billers yet.
The coders send it out for these people that are used to getting paid for. Then what happens?
Yeah, then it goes over to the billing department, and that's when it gets packaged up and actually sent to the health plan. You know, the Aetnas, Cignas, Blue Crosses of the world. And then there's an entire process to track that, make sure that it gets submitted appropriately and it's not denied. And if it's denied, you've got another department of people that are working denials and going back to the providers to update documentation because it's incomplete. And so the whole process is just incredibly inefficient. And you wonder why, you know, why you stopped at the form, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's just, the barrier to entry is just too great for anyone to just pick it up and start doing it, especially pharmacists who have, you know, they don't have the EHR. They don't have money to fund billing departments. So huge barrier to entry.
I'm assuming that your product is going to make all that smoother. But still at the end, who does a biller send it to that it's just not going to get denied because they say, well, this is just a pharmacist? And I only say just a pharmacist because I'm referring back to the document from 50 years ago that says they're just pharmacists. We're not going to pay them for that. So where's the magic, Sam?
Well, here's the interesting thing. You know, it's really hard to change the Social Security Act. And it's really hard to pass a policy that, you know, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that billions of dollars added to, you know, CMS's budget. But where the action really occurs is at the state level. And so there have been states that have passed policy that it is now law. Health plans are required to pay pharmacists.
Really?
At or just below the rate of a physician, as long as what they're billing is within their scope of practice, they are required by law.
Is that right?
That makes it interesting.
I just talked to a gentleman last week that I recorded the show, and he was telling me that, like, Idaho is one of the leaders in that they're introducing a lot of areas where the scope of practice is pertinent to the pharmacist, and then they're kind of rewriting the laws to say, well, anything that then falls into a similar test or a similar product is also going to be covered now, because that's kind of in the scope. They don't have to reinvent the wheel on all of these. So,
right.
How many are we seeing then? I mean, when you say a state, is this happening then, or?
Yeah. Oh, the example that you use for Idaho, I think it's important to point out that there's one piece of moving the profession forward and innovating that is scope of practice, right? What pharmacists are able to do with patients, and removing those barriers. So prescribing, you know, administering all types of vaccines to any type of patient, you know, the list goes on. And then there's a separate piece that is getting the pharmacist or requiring health plans to pay the pharmacist for those activities. So you have to focus on both.
Being able to do it and getting paid for it.
Exactly right. Idaho's done a really great job of writing these things in a way that allows, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the ability to kind of update them without a whole bunch of technical updates to regulations and the law and such. But yeah, Idaho being one that's definitely advancing in scope of practice and has some payment opportunities there as well. I think it's more focused on the Medicaid side. And then you've got, you know, a handful, it's going on 10 now probably, that are passing payment parity, which essentially just means pharmacists have to get paid if they bill for something in that state. So we're talking a good chunk of states. I mean, maybe getting up to close to 20 or so.
Why don't they need the federal law to change in order for the states to do this? Is there an opposition or opposing sides, or if the state approves it, then that's fine?
Yeah, so the state essentially governs anyone doing business within their borders, right? So insurance providers who are offering, you know, commercial insurance or employer-sponsored plans, so they've got the jurisdiction essentially to create their own rules, right? Now on the federal side, as you mentioned, Social Security Act, I mean, that references basically applies to if I am a pharmacist taking care of a patient down here in Texas and they've got traditional Medicare, you know, the red, white, and blue card.
Mm-hmm.
I can't bill Medicare directly for those services. In fact, I think it's against the law for me to do so because it creates administrative burden, fraud, waste, and abuse.
Like my kid come to me and say, Mom said this, where Mom didn't really say it.
Exactly. Yeah. And how most of healthcare works is, you know, it comes from the top and then it trickles down. You know, Medicare will make a move or implement a policy and then everyone else will adopt it. Well, in this case, we have a grassroots approach going on where the states are taking, you know, action into their own hands, passing these laws. And now we're going back to Medicare to say, hey, look at every state is passing this. Why don't you guys get on board? It's really an interesting play in terms of how we're attacking policy this time around.
And whatever percent are already paying for it, it's like your Medicare, you're only this percent, but why don't you get on board? Whatever, 80% is already doing it or whatever on the non-Medicare side.
Exactly right. Yep.
What's standing in the way of just everybody doing this tomorrow? Is there anything standing in the way?
No, nothing's standing in the way. Actually, like activating it and actually doing it is different from the ability to do it, right?
Spread that out. What do you mean by that?
All pharmacists, well, pharmacists in the appropriate states, are able to do this tomorrow. They're able to do it tomorrow.
What do you mean by appropriate states? Is it a state that has said the scope of a pharmacist can do this, and then there's some proof they'll get paid for it? Is that what you mean by ones that are able?
Yeah, if we're talking about medical billing in particular, I mentioned earlier when you asked where does that data go?
Yeah.
And I refine that to a specific use case. Well, that's because there's like five different use cases, right? And you start understanding the complexity of this problem and why it's so hard to solve and why we haven't solved it yet. So I would say a majority of pharmacists in the United States are able to get paid for services, right? You can do that through, you know, a lot of the MTM programs that are out there today. Like, and people are doing it today.
Gotcha. There's probably not a state that says a pharmacist is not allowed to get paid for something that they're allowed to do.
Right. Yeah. And you can get creative with that, right? It's not illegal for me to get paid to provide patient care.
Sure.
There's just not a mandate in every state saying that, you know, if I do bill, then I have to get paid.
Sure. All right. So if every pharmacist in every state is allowed to bill for something, all of them are your potential customer, but you're just saying that some may not get paid? Or do you walk your first statement back and say, yes, everybody can use this now?
I think because the landscape is so complex, and there are so many use cases, it comes down to focus at the beginning. So what's the very first way we're going to get pharmacists paid for services?
There's got to be enough success there for pharmacists to buy into it.
Exactly. We've got to provide value in some sort of way for pharmacists to buy into it.
Yeah. You don't want to have a, whatever the fees for this, a monthly fee or the program fee or something, and then have them be pulling teeth and then maybe get a buck or something down the road because they build the right peep. They've got to feel success.
Exactly right. And sometimes it is intuition, you know, especially you're working with an entrepreneur or pharmacist running their own pharmacy. They get it. They know when they see something that they like, and they know that, you know, these are good people that I'm working with, and there's a return on investment here. And others, you know, they want to get an Excel spreadsheet out and run a, you know, a time study, time and motion study, and see if the actual minutes down to the minute that I'm investing pharmacist time into are going to return my investment. So we've done both of those things, and we're getting some success, at least in this first payment model that we have with pharmacists today.
Yeah, because there's costs involved of what the pharmacist time, the learning curve, which you've made smaller, but your program, just the hassle factor, all the stuff that goes into starting a new program. Some pharmacists are just jumping in, and some are saying, let's spread this out. But even with that, you've shown success, even for the people that just their whole heart's not in it. They're looking at numbers and there's success there.
Right. And I think that's, you know, one of the things I'm most proud about is that, you know, we do have to earn trust, earn respect, and win these folks over, win my colleagues over. It's a good thing. It makes us work hard to do the right thing and build a really great product that works.
Yeah, there's probably been enough pharmacists that have been like me that have been screwed over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And so you've got to come at it with a great product, but also great success to get pharmacists on board.
Right. And I think when you have your initial user base or your initial kind of innovators, I would call them, the ones that are willing to try things that are new and willing to risk that time involved, you know, once you win a couple of those folks over, they start saying good things about you and telling their friends about you. Like, hey, this is what I'm getting out of them. I really think these are pretty good guys, really good product. You should check them out. So
yeah,
that feels natural. You know, that feels like the type of culture we want to build at the company.
Let's say that a pharmacist knows they're going to get paid. They know the numbers are right. It's not a huge cost of entry. For some pharmacists, where would that stumbling block be still if you could say, hey, this is going to make financial sense? Mm-hmm. Where's the stumbling block still?
I think it goes with scaling it. Any pharmacy can dedicate, you know, 15 minutes or a half hour to document patient care to get paid. But how do we take that to 40 hours, right? One full-time FTE, full-time position.
You got an owner or someone else that maybe has, well, we'll give you 5%. We'll give you a couple
right.
hours a week to this thing. But all of a sudden they say, well, to make this work, we probably have to do it, get to 40. And how's that going to happen?
Right. How do we invest in, you know, a pharmacist's salary ahead of them bringing in this revenue? It's not insurmountable in terms of overcoming that barrier, but it's... you know, it takes it might take some lobbying, you know, to the owner or the manager of the business. It might take some operational changes. And that all comes down to running a business. So it's our job to bring as many opportunities as possible at the highest ROI possible to pharmacies and leave it up to them to decide how they want to operationalize it, how they want to scale it. And, you know, I believe in them. They're, you know, independent pharmacies especially, they're entrepreneurs from the get-go. They're already creative.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to figure it out. We don't need to tell them how they should do it.
If someone's like, well, I'll give it a try, but I agree with Mike. Those damn forms were a pain in the ass and, you know, I don't want to do that again. But I'll give it some time, Sam. I'll let you prove me wrong. How much time would they have to invest in this?
I'll be safe and say 1 hour.
Really?
1 hour. Because we know that time is a big barrier to entry. We know that pharmacists are grinding day in and day out. They're using 8 or 9 different software platforms. They've got patients coming up to the counter, they're answering phone calls, they're going to the drive-through window. It is chaotic. You don't have a whole lot of time to spend. So you got to make a good first impression. So if you can spend an hour with us, 20 minutes maybe on a live demo or learning how to use the software, or maybe less than that, and put in another half hour of time with patients, we'll get you paid at least some amount at the end of that month, and we'll deposit it directly in your bank account.
No matter what state they're in, or are some states you can't make this guarantee to?
We can guarantee it in every state. We just need more time.
Gotcha. You get funding from TechStars.
Our first major funding came from TechStars.
What is that?
So TechStars is a technology accelerator. It's a, 1,000 companies apply to be a part of an accelerator program. I think 1% get selected. And it's a 3-month program. You and 9 other companies go through and meet a whole bunch of different mentors, investors, get education on essentially how to start and scale a technology company quickly.
What's in it for those people?
They get a percentage of equity in the company for signing up.
They're only choosing those that they think are going to be the most successful, or are they picking people that have like a great story and that kind of stuff?
You know, these are for very early stage companies. And when we went through it, we were, you know. And so I think every managing director or the person really in charge of the accelerator has different philosophies on how to select companies. And I think that, you know, it can be fluid as well. It might be a really great market. It might be a really great product, or it might be really great founders. And so kind of a combination of those things, I'd say.
Who they believe in and they think, well, maybe this isn't quite it, but something might
exactly
be or whatever. They want to see it work. That's my beef about Shark Tank. You walk in there and these people have great ideas and they're like, well, have you sold 5 million of these products yet? And they're like, no, we've only sold 1 million. And they're like, off with your head, get out of here. We only want you if you've sold this. And I'm like, if I sold that amount of money, I probably wouldn't need Shark Tank. It's not for small companies, but this, it sounds like that was for the tech starter. It sounds like that's for smaller, almost like ideas, right?
Yeah, it could be idea stage. For us, we were kind of on the brink of closing our first major customer. And I think, you know, the Shark Tank thing is a lot of theatrics. I think the reality to that, though, is every investor is different. And
yeah,
and each one cares about different things or interested in different things and knows more about particular subjects than others. And so while one might see, you know, straight up finances and growth and sales and, you know, those types of KPI metrics, another might see, you know, potential and like a limited market and, you know, might think that, you know, it'd be really hard to scale or operationalize that scale. And so you really got to, you know, get matched up with the people that,
yeah,
you know, see the world the way you see it and see a future that you see.
You were a pharmacist at one point, a practicing pharmacist.
Yeah.
What did that feel like to go from there to all of a sudden having your idea funded?
Incredibly exciting and scary at the same time. I think when you start something new, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, pharmacists, you know, can be jaded because we've been at this for so long and telling the same story to ourselves for 100 years,
yeah,
and have been burned multiple times as well. You know, that's kind of ingrained in me a little bit too. And so when someone comes in and they've got, you know, money that they want to give you, you kind of are like, well, what's the catch, you know?
Yeah.
So there's those types of emotions going on as well. But ultimately, you know, it was exciting to have someone believe in you when,
yeah,
really, Josh, my co-founder, and I, at the time, we're knocking on a lot of doors, telling a lot of stories, and a lot of people telling us it was going to be hard and, you know, probably not going to work out. And so we had to power through all that. And TechStars was really the first group to say, you know, I believe in you guys and let's do this.
And you told them basically the same story you're telling me now. Was there anything else you added to that?
No, my story has been refined extremely.
So,
oh, yeah.
It was a little bit more muddy back then with what you guys were going to do.
Oh, yeah, totally. I just came in hot, like a lot of fire. I was just extremely passionate and believed in the idea, believed in, you know, pharmacists and our ability to impact patient care. I just came in, you know, a little bit all over the place, but the passion was there. The fire was there. And I think, you know, having a subject matter expert coming from the field trying to fix a problem is benefited me and helped us, you know, get selected. So,
but the nuts of it still back then was we're trying to get pharmacists paid for services and we're going to find an easy way to do it.
Plain and simple.
What happens after Techstars then?
It was more during than after. We did close our first customer right when we got accepted for that program. So
really?
Yeah, we were heading into a 3 months of an intense amount of work through the program, the Techstars program, and also trying to operationalize our first contract with a major health plan.
Are you working as a pharmacist at the time?
No, I'd quit the hospital that I was working at previously 12 months prior to that and had essentially ceased all consulting work that I was doing to pay the bills at the time and was just full-time working on the idea, working on the company.
You stopped your own income for this. This was going to go.
Yeah, it was the only choice at the time. I needed more time and just made kind of a calculation and said, if we're really going to make this work and, you know, win this customer, I got to give it everything I got.
Before you got this customer, though, had you already stopped work?
I'd been consulting.
I got you. You were still bringing some income in.
Yeah, to basically cover the bills and make sure I had a roof over my head. Yep.
Then when this customer finally came along, you're like, hey, this needs time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there was no choice at that point. And I was able to then use, you know, a combination of the investment and the initial contract revenue to at least replace part of that consulting money that I was bringing in.
What did your days look like then after you got this first customer? What kind of stuff were you doing?
Oh man, everything. It's hard to answer that question. We were in the weeds with the product and how we would build it. You know, I'm not in there laying down code, but I'm helping, you know, frame out the architecture and,
yeah,
you know, how we're going to, you know, spin up this electronic health record.
Would you say this is app-based or is it Windows-based or what is it?
It's a web-based.
Web-based. You're not actually doing code, but you're setting up little diagrams and just saying where you want what to happen after this click, basically, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so like designing and prototyping. And then, but also, like, how's our database going to get set up? And what type of data do we need to save? And how should that be structured? And how should that be reported out?
Did you have to hire for all that? You didn't know all this, right?
I knew enough to be dangerous, but, you know, my counterpart and co-founder, Josh, was really the perfect complement for me. He knew all that, and he also knew how to translate it for me and educate me so that I could be helpful as we developed the initial iteration of the platform.
Because he's not a pharmacist.
No, he's a software engineer and an artist.
And you brought a ton of reality to things then of what's going to fly and what's not going to fly.
Yeah, you learn pretty quick. You know, the idea part and the vision is easy. Then you got to learn how to execute. And
right.
Especially at that stage, you've got to figure out how to make a lot of progress with a limited amount of time and resources.
Because you had to present something to your customer in a certain amount of time, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had deadlines to meet and, you know, people relying on us. And so at that point, I think we didn't outsource anything. Everything's always been done internally, but we hired convinced an old coworker of Josh's to come onto the team and help us out at that time.
To help build the program?
Yeah, to launch the initial iteration of the platform.
He knew how to do the enough coding and stuff to make it work.
Yep.
So you three are sitting around in your proverbial garage.
Yeah, I guess you could think of it like that, but there was no garage. There are, you know, home offices for each of us. We've been a remote first company since the beginning. That's where Josh came from. And
the three of you are remote from each other?
Correct.
Really cool.
Even pre-pandemic, you know, we leverage Zoom and Slack, and that was new for me coming from the hospital health system world where you do everything in person, and and a meeting. But yeah, no garage, but same sort of mindset, same sort of stage.
An online garage.
Yeah, exactly. Virtual garage.
So you sold this to the company. Did you have any mock-ups or anything, or was it kind of sold on the idea of what was going to be built?
The fully functioning version was a prototype, and we had been, we've been basically working full-time to build that out. When they decided to work with us, we just realized we had to speed that up as much as possible. So we were probably, I don't know, over halfway there.
I'm imagining like maybe your database might not have had as much refinement because in your demonstration, maybe you didn't need to go too deep into database stuff or something like that.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's the rules of the road, especially at the very beginning, because at that point in time, my number one priority was, you know, getting the first customer on board, right? So all my time was thinking about marketing and, you know, who we need to be talking to and what the pitch should be.
Yeah.
And once we closed that first customer, it completely reversed. I was all about operations and taking care of this one client and getting the platform developed. So
it went totally marketing and big vision to the next day. You're like nose to the grindstone, right? Of getting this thing done.
And that's the way it's been ever since. You know, it's like constantly switching based on what the most important thing is for that moment in time. It's not an easy thing to do. And I don't think I'm still not very good at it, I don't think. But it's just the nature of the game.
How long were you in pharmacy?
2 years of residency, and then about 3 years in practice or in administration.
You might have decisions in front of you, but basically you're like, after that decision's made, it's like back to the course, and you know what you're going to be doing 3 days from now and 3 weeks from now. A pharmacy owner, we know it too. We know we're going to make some decisions here and there, but basically we're going to get to the store in the morning. It's going to look about the same and that kind of stuff. But you're flip-flopping from visionary to marketer to salesperson to designer to executor, all those kind of things.
Yeah, and I would also compare it to kind of the initial days of opening up that pharmacy.
Yeah, I suppose, right.
I'm sure a lot of folks, and you know, perhaps yourself included, can think back to those days where, you know, I got to find some brick and mortar to put this business in. I got to file for an LLC. I've got to tell my friends and family that, you know, to come get their prescriptions filled here. I've got to, you know, take an ad out in the, you know, the church newsletter. I've got to, you know, all those things. I mean, it's very similar to that. And it just feels like it moves so quickly. It just, the external forces change, I think, at a very high degree. And so do your emotions.
Yeah. What do you mean by external forces? I can imagine that, but give me an example of that.
Well, I think, like, you know, when you're trying to sell to large health plans, you know, they're huge, huge customers and incredibly complex organizations. But, you know, one day you might be trying to contact 100 of them in the next week or 2 weeks or something. And you're trying to get in touch with as many people as possible, cast a wide net. And then eventually you find the match, right? The folks who are looking to do the things that you are talking about, what your product does, right? When you find that match, you shift all your focus to, you know, building trust
with
that company and that person. And it can be, you know, and the importance of that is because, you know, it can fund the next 6 months of your business.
Oh yeah.
If you win this client, and it can mean so much. And so that's one example of an external force.
Yeah. It's okay to cast that net for a while and to throw out feelers and things like that. But when someone's putting that kind of money into it and that kind of a decision that's going to fund you for 6 months, you got to give them a lot of TLC to make sure that happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very meaningful for us, at the early stages that we were at, but it's also, you know, it's extremely meaningful for them.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're looking at you and believe what you're saying and believe in you that you're going to be able to deliver for them. You want to be able to take care of them.
What does your biggest customer look like? Are they a pharmacist, or are they a healthcare company that has pharmacists that are going to be using this?
Yeah, they're a health plan.
A health plan.
So not a PBM, a health plan.
An insurer.
Yeah.
Who's hiring the PBM and so on. Mm-hmm. And they're hiring you knowing that their pharmacist will be on it? Or do I have that backwards? The health plan is a person that is going to see the results of DocStation and then pay.
Right. So they're like, they hire their PBM to manage their dispensing pharmacy network. They're hiring us.
Oh, I gotcha.
To manage their clinical pharmacy network, their provider network.
I have it backwards. We're looking here at the other end, at the plan. What are they going to get? Are they going to respond to this? And then your job, I imagine, is to then back up and then sell this. And I say sell in quotes. It might be financially. It might be sell the idea to pharmacists who then input this and then come back out that first end we're talking about there.
Exactly. And that goes back. It's another chicken and egg, right?
Exactly.
If, you know, a health plan is buying in to what you're selling, you have to have something to sell. So we had to get pharmacists up and using the platform. And in the same regard, you've got to have provide some sort of value to pharmacists to want to use your platform. So you're constantly telling different stories depending on...
That is a chicken and egg.
...who your stakeholder is. And then when you add investors into that mix too, then you got three and...
Right.
You know, some days you don't know where you are. You just do your best to keep your head above water.
The first thing that you need to sell me if I'm a plan leader is that I'm going to pay for this stuff in the first place. I don't care if it comes to me with a crayon on a brown paper bag. You've got to sell me the idea that I'm even going to pay for this, right? And then you're going to say, well, all right, well, chicken and egg again. Well, yeah, it's going to be on this kind of format and it's going to come to you on this and you can do this and that. But ultimately, they have to agree to pay for it in the first place. Pay for pharmacists' professional service, right?
Right. And I would say even before that, you've got to sell them on the fact that pharmacists are going to return an ROI. Like, pharmacists are a valuable member of the healthcare team.
Gotcha.
But once, you know, after a while, I just started getting some experience, started learning more about, you know, sales, especially at an early stage company.
Yeah.
And you realize that you really just need to ratchet up your filtering skills, right? And so you're trying to find the people that already believe that, and then talk about what you're selling and convince not only them, but maybe the four or five other stakeholders that are involved in the decision.
You're selling the whole clinical package to these plans. You're selling who the pharmacist is, what they can do, how it's going to save them money, how it's going to improve everybody, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on.
Yes, we have to do that because we are essentially selling into a category that we're helping create and evolve.
You're creating the category, but you guys are actually more focused on the software of this. But the reason you have to extend so far is because you're creating a new category.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Gotcha.
It'd be a heck of a lot easier just to build the software.
And if you could do that, that's what your focus is. But you're building the category because you have to. You're not a full package. You just have to be the full package now because nothing would exist without you.
Yeah, it's a very heavy, you know, service component to it.
Why the hell are you sitting here talking to me? You should get to work.
Oh, believe me, buddy.
That's a big undertaking.
It is.
And you're doing it, though.
Yeah, because it's the right thing to do.
Of course.
It's the right thing to do for patients.
It's an obvious ball that once you get rolling, it's going to keep rolling. It's just that, you know, a lot of work up front doing it.
Yep.
If you do this legwork outside of DocStation and get this stuff rolling, does DocStation take over then in terms of showing this ROI somehow? Does it show this so you're not back, you know, just knocking on doors a year from now with the same people and showing, see, I told you, they can see in this program what's happening then?
Correct. So it's about inertia. You know, you really have to put in a lot of legwork up front and find the people that believe in vision without any sort of, you know, before we had any sort of customers or any patients on our platform, any pharmacists using the platform, there's no way I can pull out a report on ROI and guarantee anyone that, you know, this is going to be a good idea. You got to find the people that believe in it and are willing to take that risk. So once you have that initial customer, then you get some initial data. You could say, hey, this is real and people are using it and people are getting what we promised. that they would get. And you start, you know, it expands your very first market a little bit more into people that are interested, might be early adopters rather than the very front end, which are the innovators. So, and once you get that customer, you get some credibility and you can convince some investors who might give you a little bit of money, which extends your runway and your timeline to continue doing things. You can't build it all at once. And the thing that we set out to build, you know, we're maybe, you know, the vision's really big. So we might, maybe we're like 10% there. But we're making progress along the way to do exactly what you just said. You know, we want it to immediately calculate the ROI and do that in real time. So the health plans can monitor these programs and see which pharmacies are the highest performers and make decisions on how they want to manage their member population using our software.
Well, it's that chicken and the egg thing again, because even down the road, though, let's say that you've done all your sales and all that inertia has started. It also helps people if they get a DocStation claim because they know the company has success and they know that something from a pharmacist using DocStation is going to be successful and therefore we want to pay it kind of thing, right? It's a program, but it's so much more than the program. Even if you're not selling it anymore, you're not trying to recreate this market. So let's say you created this market and now DocStation is the program for it. Then it expands beyond that again, right? It's more of a belief system.
Yeah, there's credibility. So
credibility.
Yeah, once you, you know, like maybe you're working with one Blue Cross plan and then maybe two and then three and four, and you know, other Blue Crosses are like, hey, you know, my friends over there across the country who I know, I see them at conferences, are saying these guys do good work. And you know, you're getting over that initial level of, you know, these guys are new and that's scary, right? And the snowball gets a little bit bigger, and so maybe your next sale is a little bit bigger. And you can start having conversations with, you know, a United Healthcare or an Aetna. And they know that their competitors are using this platform to activate pharmacists to improve outcomes and reduce costs. Well, why aren't we looking into this?
And there might be a straggling pharmacist on one end of it or this or that, but basically their success with DocStation, let's jump in and we'll find all the success points in there.
Right. The only way that you can even get to that point is by having a good product, a product that works, a product that provides value, that makes it easier for both the health plan and the pharmacist to do their job. And so you're never going to get there unless you build a great product. And that's the always the number one focus.
Where does DocStation then, as a company, where do you, will you make your money?
Today, we make our money selling our software to health plans. So the health plans are paying fees to use our software and to get connected with all of the pharmacies that are on our platform or will be on our platform. And so we're providing efficiencies for the health plan to leverage a valuable resource, which is the pharmacist. We're helping connect the pharmacist with the health plan so that value can be exchanged. We facilitate a payment for services and for outcomes through our platform, and we're charging, you know, a small amount to the health plan to do that. So the health plan, you know, the revenue that's coming in from the health plan is subsidizing the cost for the pharmacies to use our software.
Do the pharmacists have a fee?
Yeah, pharmacists use the platform at no cost because of that. And we know that that is, you know, money's really hard, especially today. You know, we don't have a whole lot. So, you know, we want to get the tool and get the platform in front of the pharmacist so they can start taking care of patients, start getting paid for it. And we only want to make money when they make money is kind of the idea. There's this other end of the spectrum where when we start billing for services and we don't have a direct relationship or a direct contract with the health plan, we've got to find some way to get paid in that scenario as well. And so in that scenario, we'll, you know, take a portion of the income that we bring to pharmacists from using our technology. So kind of two separate business models.
I was even going to ask about the sales function, because it sounds like in the first section, it's like 100% you want to go to health plans, and then it's almost an easy sell to the pharmacy. It's like, well, it's free as long as you have some time to do it and you'll learn this. It's like a no-brainer almost.
Right.
But I can see, though, when you don't have a plan set up, yeah, that you'd have the pharmacists go back. Hopefully the health plan doctors and so on, then they don't even really think, well, is this a one that started from the health plan doc station, or is this a doc station coming back in? You know, it just seems like if you have a great name to it, which you do, people won't even know really what's coming or going. It'll just be the promise of ease, and it won't matter who started it, really. The chicken and the egg again.
Exactly right. And if you believe in the vision and you know what you're doing is the right thing and is going to generate value, you just got to find a way to make it sustainable and survive. We want to build everything, of course, but what's going to be sustainable for the next 12 months? Like, how do we make money? So that's shifted over time. You know, we first started, it's like, okay, Epic and Cerner charge doctors a monthly subscription fee or annual. So we tried that. That didn't work because, you know, if pharmacists don't have a whole lot of extra cash laying around to invest in their ninth platform. And then you say, okay, well, you know, let's try health plans. Can we provide enough value to health plans off the get-go to start to get paid that way and give it away for free to the pharmacist? Okay, great. Oh, that buys us enough time to build out the automation that we need to submit claims to the health plan and bring in money for pharmacies that way and sustain the business that way. And so you're constantly evaluating and figuring out, how do I extend the amount of time we can work on this? Because I know we've got smart people on the team. We're going to figure all these things out. We're going to build a great product, great company, but we just need to survive for the time being.
My pharmacy, I'm doing that right now. It's like cancer diagnosis too. Every time you can stick around for 6 months, you know, a new medicine comes out. And with the pharmacy, you know, I hate to say it, but I mean, I never thought I'd have my hand out to the government, but this PPP and the EIDLs and things like that, it helps.
Helpful, absolutely.
I never thought I would be looking to the government for that, maybe reduce taxes, but never for kind of a handout from them. But I stuck around, and you stick around for 6 more months and that happens. And then some other, you know, law from the SCOTUS is going to come in, you know, or something like that. So every 6 months, just hang out that much longer.
Exactly right. Our software company, your pharmacy, I feel like we're really in the same position.
Yeah.
What I mean is that we're approaching this golden opportunity where the timing's right. You know, we've got an oversupply of pharmacists graduating from pharmacy schools to fill this primary care gap. All these different factors at play. If we can just survive another 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, we are going to be in a golden age. I really believe it, where we're going to be able to achieve all the things that are promised to us in pharmacy school, all the things that our mentor has been saying for 40 years, and really make the impact on patients that we really want to. I really think that we're on the brink of something.
I've got a lot of my sons, maybe my daughters, but they specialize in procrastinating. And there's a certain value, though, in procrastinating, though. You know, you don't want to procrastinate so much that you shoot yourself in the foot without enough time to do a quality product. But you wait around and sometimes things come to you that you just didn't think about when you weren't under the gun. In your case, Sam, what maybe one company might think is a little scary, or you being a leader, you might think is a little scary, you know, not knowing where your next 6 months of payments are going to come from. There's a beauty in that, though, of saying you don't know where it's going to come from, because that allows you to be nimble and to shift, and you're not afraid to shift. In fact, you have to shift every 6 months, you know? So you're set up to take advantage of that pot at the end of the rainbow, because shifting is part of your DNA, basically, in your company.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It's being patient and being very observant and learning as much as you can along the way. I do, you know, procrastinate or at least delay decisions until they have to be made sometimes, right? Because you're learning things constantly every day or each new conversation. You don't want to make a decision that's going to have a long-term impact, right? That's where the risk comes in, a long-term impact or a long-term lock into some sort of financial or resource, right? You don't want to, because that could break you.
Right.
The nimbleness is one of the things that is great about a startup that differentiates you or puts you at an advantage to a billion-dollar company, so to speak.
For sure. It's like my wife is like, you know, she'll want the garage cleaning. It's like, well, I could, but maybe I won't make enough room for your 67 Mustang I might buy you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Coming down from the clouds, then, what should a pharmacy do right now? Can they help at all? Can they help themselves? Can they help you at all? Which is the same thing. Should they be looking something up? Should they be trying to get in touch with somebody outside of your company, one of the health plans or whatever? What can they do right now?
The biggest thing they could do, if they do want to help us, is sign up for our software. Like I said, no cost. Just get on it, pop it open, and start using it. Really, we're very close to the point where no matter what type of pharmacist you are or where you're located, when you log in, you're going to get some sort of value out of the software. And we need pharmacists to tell us, hey, if you could just do this, that would make me want to use it.
Hmm.
And, you know, another pharmacist across the country or in Canada, for example.
Yeah.
To do the same thing, because that has been kind of one of the most successful things that we've done to date is be really great listeners and understand the problem and then implement things that solve those problems. So we just want to engage. You know, if you get value out of it immediately, wonderful. If not, in the first 30 days, tell us what we can do to make it valuable for you.
Now, will a pharmacist in every state, will some of them just be going on and maybe just like checking it out, or will they actually do something on there? Can they actually fill something out and then like tap a button and say, send this somewhere, or not necessarily because you might not have all those connections yet?
Yeah, absolutely. They can log into the platform and import their entire patient base and start managing those patients, you know, tracking blood pressure, you know, tracking adherence, you know, communicating with the health plan, running reports. All these things are things that do provide value to some pharmacists, probably a lot of pharmacists, but not every pharmacist.
But when they send it to the health plan, they're probably not the health plan that you set up, this original one, as your first customer, but they could be thousands of plans that will respond with payment from their sending this to them, right?
Exactly right.
That's cool.
Exactly. Because your pharmacy, you might have, you know, there might be 8 or 9 different health plans that provide coverage to the patients that are coming into your pharmacy. So we want to be able to have one workflow. You take care of patients, we get the claim submitted, and you just get paid.
Yeah, because right now you haven't even monetized the pharmacist side of it. So they're just going to get 100% paid from that.
Exactly.
Well, that's really cool. I might even do that.
We'd love to have you.
If I get to sit down more and play on the computer, I'll take that over about anything.
I hear you.
Sam, what a pleasure talking to you. I could go on for a long time. That's so interesting. Thanks for spending the time and walking me through that. That's a really cool thing. And I agree. I know we've heard it, but we're right around the corner. There's some really cool stuff coming together.
We're right there. We got to keep at it and we'll get there.
We'll get there. All right, Sam, we'll be watching. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.